Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Salve and salutations. My name is Charles Chestnut. This is Storied History, and this story is about the Polynesian people crossing the Pacific Ocean 1,000 years ago. Salve is Latin for greetings, and salutations are a form of greetings, but I guess this time around I shouldn't use Latin, or at least just Latin. So let me restate, salve and salutations, and yorana and aloha. That's Tahitian and Hawaiian. So the Polynesian people themselves are a group of people that are native to the Pacific Islands. Many listeners will be familiar with them slightly because they are the subject of Moana, the Disney movie. She is a Polynesian princess, and that story with Maui, the demigod of the wind and sea, is actually from the Polynesian mythological tradition. And just like in the movie Moana, were they voyagers? Yes. Yes, they were. Absolutely. So the real question is, did they cross thousands of miles of ocean 1,000 years ago? Yes. Absolutely. 100%. Without a doubt. Yes, they did. How do we know that? Because there were people living in Hawaii 1,000 years ago, and that's how they got there. This has been Storied History. We do hope you have enjoyed it. If you did...
Charles?
What?
We can't put out an episode that's only a minute and a half long. We should probably talk some more about this.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then let's expand on that then. How about this? If the Polynesian people crossed 4,000 miles of ocean to get to Hawaii 1,000 years ago, did they also cross 6,000 miles of ocean to get to South America 1,000 years ago? And the answer is... probably. Yeah, it's a lot less certain, but there are some very good and interesting connections and some fascinating new evidence that says yes. Yes, in fact, they did do that. Now, I am timing this episode to coincide with the release of Moana 2. That is not an accident. But I have not seen it yet. So let me just get that out of the way first. I haven't seen it yet. I really liked the first one. I thought it was a great story, great movie with wonderful music. But I'm not going to be using any visuals from those movies, and I'm definitely not using any song clips. Because while I enjoyed the movie, and I do enjoy the songs, I'm not picking a fight with the mouse over copyright and fair use. So any songs you hear, it is just me singing, and I am not, in point of fact, a 16-year-old Polynesian Disney princess. So let's start with the Polynesian people themselves. Who were they, and how did they sail across the oceans? Well, the story begins some 5,000 years ago, when the people from South Asia, probably Taiwan, began to sail on the ocean and make these little trips to the uninhabited islands, or almost uninhabited islands, that make up the Pacific Islands. So for thousands of years after that, they were just kind of spreading out. And it's not all that difficult to cross those relatively short distances in their large double-hulled wooden canoes. Double-hulled does not mean one canoe inside of another. It's not one canoe that has double hulls. It means that there's two canoes, one on either side. Huge, long canoes. They are joined together to provide a stable vessel. And these were big. These are not small. They are 50 to 120 feet long, which is 15 to 36 meters. These ocean-going vessels are stable, they are decently fast, they had a huge amount of storage space, and they were absolutely capable of taking ocean trips. And they did, for a very long time. For thousands of years, in fact. So just in brief, over the next, call it 2,000 years, up to about 1500 BC, they had gone through the Philippines, and they began moving through the smaller island chains, including Fiji in about 900 BC and Samoa by about 800 BC. And then they stopped. And just as a side note, they did not populate Australia. That was a different group of people. The Polynesian people probably made contact. They may have seen or landed on the shores, but they did not actually populate the continent of Australia. The Aborigines in Australia have a distinct cultural, genetic, and linguistic heritage that is separate from the Polynesian people. So, for whatever reason, they stopped. There's a great line in the movie, Moana, the first movie, where she discovers her people's heritage, and she comes running out of a cave after discovering all of the big ocean-going vessels, and she yells out, "We were voyagers! Why'd we stop?" And that's a good question. Why did they stop? The answer is probably distance and climate. There are a few theories, but they always really come down to distance and climate, weather. It's easy to sail to the next island when the next island is 100 or so miles away. It is significantly more difficult when the winds and the prevailing weather patterns are no longer favorable and it's 1,000 miles away rather than 100, and you don't know if there's anything there. And just as another side note, I did notice something very interesting in doing the research for this. I'm not saying that this has anything massively to do with the history of the Polynesian people, but it is very interesting. If you look at the Google Maps satellite view, zoomed all the way out from the Pacific Islands, to the point where the depth of the ocean is now clearly visible, that Google kind of puts that in, it is very, very obvious that the islands that were settled very quickly are in the more shallow areas. And the stop that Moana was yelling about after Samoa, that happened right where the ocean gets extraordinarily deep, where all of a sudden you're no longer kind of on a continental shelf. It is just, there's a massive drop off. The Pacific becomes incredibly deep. And that is where they stopped for a long time. Are those two things connected? I honestly don't know. Maybe. It seems like it would be, but I'm not, this, not really an expert. Anyway, Fiji by 900 BC, Samoa by 800 BC, and then they stopped. They just stopped for almost 2,000 years. Did they stop voyaging? Probably not. Did they stop discovering? Yeah, pretty much. And again, it's just distance and climate. They could still do it. They could still travel on the oceans. But when the distance is thousands of miles, not hundreds of miles, the odds are, shall we say, not ever in your favor. They still could cross those vast stretches, and they probably did, but trying to find Hawaii in the middle of the Pacific Ocean when you don't even know if there is anything there or not is like trying to find a few small islands in the middle of the Pacific Ocean when you don't know if there is anything there or not. So let's talk about how they navigated, or rather, how they wayfounded. How they found their way. Technically, there is a difference between navigating and wayfinding. Navigating involves the precise knowledge of where you are. Wayfinding does not. It means that you know where you are going and generally how to get there, but not your exact position at any given time. There is a difference. Because I am a hiker, a hiking equivalent would be the difference between going through the mountains and pulling out a map or your GPS and knowing exactly where you are in relation to everything else, or just following along a long footpath, trusting that wherever it bends and turns and goes, you're going to get to your destination eventually if you stay on the path. I may end up using the terms navigating and wayfinding kind of interchangeably by accident. Apologies, it's just for the sake of simplicity. So, in general, the Polynesian people were able to use the stars to have a general understanding of how far north and south they were, but not how far east and west. That is the difference between wayfinding and celestial navigation that the British figured out, and then later codified using the twin pillars of math and science. This was different. Wayfinding is less accurate because you do not have a map to say this is exactly where I am. But oddly enough, what they were doing is actually more useful if you don't know where you are going. And let me explain that. If you have the maps of the entire world, or of the oceans at least, and you are able to use a sextant and the stars to chart and plot your exact course, you would know exactly where you are and where you're going to go. But in order to do that, you already had to have all of those maps and those measurements in place and ready to go, ready to use, and that is what the British did. The Polynesian people did not have those maps. In fact, they didn't know where the islands were. But what they could do is figure out where land probably was by looking at the ocean. Because the Polynesian explorers, the masters, could tell where the islands were even if they couldn't see them. And how did they do this? Well, like the wonderful song We Know the Way by Lin-Manuel Miranda in Moana. We read the wind and the sky when the sun is high. We sail the length of the seas on the ocean breeze. At night we name every star. We know where we are, where we are. That is not just a poorly sung song. It is actually not all that far off to what the history is. That really is what they were doing. They were taking cues and they were reading the environmental factors to determine their way. So we read the wind in the sky when the sun is high. That's the cloud patterns in the sky and the wave patterns on the ocean. And not just when the sun is high, but when the sun is gone, they can read the stars. From a close perspective, if the wind is blowing things, you can know they came from somewhere. There's probably an island over there if there's some leaves on the wind. If you can smell something from sometimes far away, especially if it's like a sulfur smell, hey, that could be a volcanic island over there. But much better than the wind is the clouds. Clouds build up over land, or at least the elevated land, before they build up over the water. So if the sky is completely clear, but you can see a pillar of clouds off in the distance, at very, sometimes very far distances, then, well, you know there might be something there. It's at least worth checking out. So what kind of distances are we talking about? Well, let's say you're 30 feet off the surface of the ocean, 10 meters, and you're going to look out at the horizon. The distance you can see at about 30 feet off the ocean, your horizon is about 7 miles, 14 kilometers about. You can't actually see beyond that because the Earth is curved. It's round. And yes, the Earth is round. I don't know why that is an issue with some people. The Earth is round. It is not flat. If you think that, you are wrong. And probably pretty stupid. So 6.7 miles from the observer to the horizon if you're 30 feet off the ocean, which also means that someone 7 miles away could look and see your head from 30 feet up off the ocean. That's how math works. In the tropical regions, the clouds can be very, very high, up to a ceiling of about 60,000 feet. But those are much more wispy and kind of cirrus clouds, and this is not actually what we're talking about. We're talking about the cumulonimbus clouds that are going to build up when land comes out of the ocean sometimes. And you're looking at about 20 to 25,000 feet. And that elevation gives a much, much longer distance to the horizon. So the observer, 30 feet up from the ocean in his little crow's nest, so to speak, can see 7 miles, which means that that's also the distance that someone could see him from 7 miles away. The tops of the clouds are 25,000 feet up. So they can be seen 200 miles away. So it's a lot easier to spot something from 200 miles away and sail toward it than to try to spot an island 7 miles away. So they could read the clouds. And really, that's not all that complicated in its most simplistic form. But what was complicated, much more so, is the wave patterns. And this makes a lot more sense if you're actually looking at a video or an image of this happening, but I'll try to explain. Basically, if the waves are all coming from one direction, and then all of a sudden there is a piece of land, let's say there's an island that is blocking the waves, it's going to change the wave pattern on the other side of the island. So they kind of split, and then they come back together, sort of. It sounds weird, but it's true. The waves split around the island and then kind of sort of reform on the other side of the island as they're spreading out again. But when they reform on the other side, they're not going parallel. They're in slightly different directions. They've become kind of a crosshatch pattern. And master wayfinders could spot that. They could see the patterns and how the waves are moving in different directions and determine that 100 miles or 200 miles away is a landmass popping out of the ocean. That's as far as I understand it, at least. The masters of this craft, they can see things in a different way, and it's probably a lot more complicated than that. And then there's the animals, of course. That's not a surprise. If you see birds, well, birds have to have somewhere to nest, somewhere to roost, somewhere to fly back to. So if there's birds, there's probably land around here somewhere. And if there's flotsam, stuff floating in the water, well, that came from somewhere. And if it's wood, it may have been floating for a very long distance. But you could, in theory, figure out the prevailing wind currents, or the wind and the waves and the currents, and then set off in that direction looking for other signs. Anyway, that's how they did it. And they were very, very good at it. The true masters were more familiar with their own home waters, and new places could be more difficult to masterfully wave find. But it could be done, and they did it. And they were able to settle long, long distances long, long ago. So could they do it in theory, but did they do it in practice? Yes. Yes, they did. That's how Hawaii was settled, not 1,000 years ago, it's about 800 years ago, in the year 1200, about.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And that's where they come from. They cross the Pacific Ocean in a series of probably very, very harrowing and dangerous voyages. But they eventually found, pretty much by random chance, they found the islands of Hawaii. So Hawaii, the state, is the name of the small series of islands. And they're named after Hawaii, which is the name of the largest island. And there are two explanations for where that comes from. One is the common explanation, is that the island of Hawaii is named after Hawaii Loa, and that it's a figure from the Hawaiian origin stories, the oral tradition. He is said to be the guy that actually discovered Hawaii when they were first settled, and he named them after himself. The other explanation is that Hawaii, the word, is extraordinarily close to the Polynesian word Hawaiki, which means homeland. The modern transliteration is H-A-W-A-I-I, Hawaii, and Hawaiki is spelled H-A-W-A-I-K-I, and meaning homeland, but also means the underworld, sort of. Language is weird. Anyway, so that was AD 1200. And going back to crossing the oceans, at this point, I do have to talk about the raft, the Kon-Tiki. I had heard about this raft when I was growing up in the 80s, and I'd always heard that a raft called Kon-Tiki proved it was possible to cross the Pacific Ocean using ancient technology because some Norwegian explorers did it. They crossed the Pacific on a balsa wood raft in 1947. That is 100% true. They really did. A man named Thor Heyerdahl and five fellow sailors. They rowed the Kon-Tiki from South America to the Pacific Islands in order to attempt to show that human settlement of Polynesia could have come from South America. So yeah, fun story, cool adventure. Unfortunately, his theory is 100% wrong. He got it backwards. It's a cool story. It's a fun story. And there has been a recent movie made in the last decade or so called Kon-Tiki. It's on Amazon Prime. I watched it with my mother, actually, just a little while back, kind of to prep for this. It's a good story. It's an adventure movie, and it's a fairly good one. If you're curious, it is there. Thor had mapped out his route to use the winds and, more importantly, the prevailing currents that he knew would take him across the ocean. And he was successful. He and his companions were successful in crossing the Pacific Ocean on a balsa wood raft. It took them 100 days. And that is a pretty fast turnaround time, actually, to cross 4,300 miles or 6,900 kilometers on a raft when all you're doing is using the wind and a simple steerage that's just an oar. Just as another side note, this was actually one of the more historically accurate history adventure movies that I have come across. It really was. Some of the discussions and the analysis that I looked up afterwards indicated that all of the adventure stuff actually did happen. The only stuff that was fake was the arguments that the individuals had on the raft. They kind of injected human drama and conflict where none existed. But the encounters with the sharks, the radio failure, their parrot dying, harpooning a whale, all of that actually happened. Anyway, this actual story is true, and they were able to cross the Pacific on a raft, and they proved it was possible to cross the Pacific on a raft. It's just that the reason they were trying to do it was to prove that people came from South America to Polynesia, and no, it's the other way around. All, and I do mean all, of the evidence points in that direction. But I'll get there. Okay, so we know that Thor could do it, because he did do it in 1947. But he wasn't using any of the wayfinding techniques because he just wasn't aware of them. He had a diminished view of the capabilities of the ancient people that was not a reflection of what we now know to be reality. So he didn't use any of the techniques that, well, were available back then. So what about the Polynesians? Could they have done it? Yes. And did they do it? Well, they did it a few years ago. The Polynesian Voyaging Society was founded in 1973 in Hawaii with the mission to perpetuate the art and the science, and yes, it is both an art and a science, of the traditional Polynesian voyaging and the ways that they did it. By the 1970s, that skill, that science, that art had been lost and forgotten by almost everyone. In fact, there were six, that's it, just six people on the planet that actually knew how to do this. And none of them lived in Hawaii. And five of them were not willing to talk or share their knowledge with outsiders. They wanted to teach their own children, but their own children and grandchildren were completely uninterested. They did not care about the ancient techniques of wayfinding. And the masters didn't care that the knowledge was going to be lost, no matter who came to them begging them to teach some people, other people, what these techniques and skills were. They just refused to do it. They didn't care. This ancient skill was going to die. When they died, the knowledge would die with them, and they didn't care. Except for one guy. And without this man, all of this knowledge might have been lost. His name was, and I'm going to mispronounce this, Pius Pialag, but mainly called Mao, spelled M-A-U. Mao spoke almost no English, but he agreed to help teach a new generation of students and voyagers how to use these wayfinding techniques. And it's a good thing he did. because if he had not, it is entirely possible, in fact, very probable, that all of this knowledge would have been lost and would have to have been rediscovered. Or maybe not rediscovered. The modern world moves very quickly. Maybe some people wouldn't have cared enough to kind of do this sort of thing. But he did care, and he did agree to teach. So the Polynesian Voyaging Society told Maui, "You will board my boat, sail across the sea, and restore the heart of Tafiti." No, wait, that's from Moana. The society told Mao they wanted to build a boat, sail across the sea, and journey to Tahiti. That's actually what they wanted to do. Build a boat, sail across the sea to Tahiti. They wanted to prove that it could be done with the ancient techniques of wayfinding. Because there were no traditional Hawaiian navigators that understood these things, they couldn't do it. So Mao came. The last master and the only master willing to teach. He visited Hawaii in 1973. There was a slight problem because, as I mentioned earlier, some of this traditional sailing knowledge for the wayfinding was very locationally dependent. You got to know your home very, very well. But for this voyage, Mao was going to go to Hawaii, which he was not familiar with, and sailing back to Tahiti, which he was also unfamiliar with. So he had to spend some time learning, talking to other sailors, both Western and Native, about the patterns of the sky, the patterns of the clouds, the patterns of the stars. And they actually did look at modern ocean charts to see the current, the patterns of the current. And after study, and then carefully rebuilding a replica, an ocean-going vessel of the double-hulled canoe type, they did it in 1976. It took 31 days. A double-hulled, ocean-going vessel named Hokulea arrived in Tahiti using only the ancient methods of navigation. And they were accurate down to the day. Because in the morning of the 31st day at sea, Mao stated that the next day they would see land. And sure enough, they did. It was actually late that night. There was a brief stopover at the tiny, tiny, tiny little place that they had initially spotted. And then on one other day's sailing, they made landfall in the main island of Tahiti, where they were welcomed by 17,000 people. Fully half of the population of the island turned out to greet them because it had been successful. The Polynesian Voyaging Society continues to demonstrate the possibilities of this ancient technology to the point where just a few years back, they went around the entire Pacific. They circled the Pacific Ocean using only ancient techniques. They went from Alaska down to South America, across the bottom of the Pacific, over to New Zealand, up to China, Japan, and then over to Hawaii. 43,000 miles. In their ancient vessel. Well, modern vessel, but an exactly reproduced ancient style vessel. So could they do it? Yes. Did they do it? Yes. And this is just where it becomes cool, almost. Before we talk about the real hard facts, we're going to talk about...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Legends. Maui was a demigod of the wind and sea. Maui slowed the sun down. He made a magical lasso from his sister's hair, and he caught the sun's rays, and he made the sun promise to move more slowly across the sky so that the things would grow, and he would give the people more light to work and to sail. He was a trickster, and he tricked his brothers, who were also very, very powerful. They thought that they had hooked a giant fish, but instead Maui had locked his magical fish hook into the bottom of the ocean, and he and his brothers pulled up the islands, making Hawaii. He killed an eel, buried its guts, sprouted a tree. Now we got coconuts. What can I say except you're welcome? Sorry. Moving on. From the more interesting stories for our purposes are the legends of the land beyond the ocean. No offense, Maui, and definitely no offense to The Rock. But for our purpose, that's the more interesting stuff. So, what do the legends say about what is on the other side of the Pacific Ocean? Well, on the Asian side, there are legends of a great landmass that is far, far across the ocean, but is too far to sail to. That kind of matches, although honestly, that's probably just a coincidence rather than some remnant of knowledge. But on the South American side, there is an oral tradition, oral history, oral legend, and you do have to take this with a grain of salt because it is just kind of passed down. But there are legends in South America of the people that come across the ocean made of grass, or sometimes just wearing grass. And that's literally what the Polynesian people were doing. They were wearing grass skirts. So it does match up. And that's a very interesting matchup. And it kind of adds some color and some flavor to this. But it's really not evidence in and of itself. What is evidence is two plants, pineapple and sweet potato. We'll do pineapple first. Pineapple is a plant that grows one fruit per plant. It's a herbaceous perennial about 3 to 4 feet tall. So like 1.5 meters. The plant flowers and then the individual fruits of the flowers actually join together to create a multiple fruit. And that's why it looks kind of the way it does. And there you go. That's how you get pineapple. It is indigenous to South America. We know that for a fact. In fact, they think they've identified actually exactly where it came from. It's a river between southern Brazil and Paraguay. That's probably the origin of pineapples. There have been agricultural evidence of pineapples dating back to 3,000 years ago in Peru. We know that it was cultivated by the Mayans and the Aztecs and the Incans. It was widely distributed as a staple food of the ancient and older Mesoamerican tribes and groups. It is very delicious. It has a lot of sugar and it can give you a lot of energy. It's also got a lot of vitamin C and is generally a very useful plant for sea cruises, especially if you're on a modern cruise and you just want to get drunk. But back then, it was also a great food for sea voyaging. And because it's got a kind of a husk, that really thick portion that shields and protects the tender inner flesh of the pineapple. Because it's got that thick husk, it can actually be stored very well. And more importantly, it was found extensively by the European explorers when they first reached the Pacific Islands. Pineapple was all through there. So how did it get there? Did it float? Maybe, probably not. Does a pineapple itself float? No, it doesn't. Well, what if it's attached to a pineapple tree? There is no pineapple tree. A pineapple doesn't grow from a tree. It grows from that tiny little bush that I mentioned earlier. And that's not wood. It's just kind of a leaves and a stalk. It won't float. So could a pineapple be trapped in the roots or branches of another tree and then float across the Pacific Ocean? Yeah, technically, I suppose it is possible. I mean, the Contiki did it. They floated across. But they knew exactly where to go and how to sail and how to steer there. And that wasn't randomly drifting. It's unlikely. I'll say that much. And soaking in salt water is not conducive to plants growing. But it is theoretically possible. I personally think it's a lot more likely that a pineapple was transported across the Pacific in those giant double-hulled canoes. The other plant is the sweet potato. And the sweet potato is a staple of South America. The sweet potato is native to South America. It is a large, starchy, sweet-tasting, tuberous root. It is a root vegetable, and it is very dense in, well, starches. So it's got a high calorie count, which is good for a staple crop, which the sweet potato was and is. And as the name would suggest, it is kind of sweet. There is a very, very high chance that someone listening to this podcast just recently had a sweet potato pie at their Thanksgiving dinner in America. It's extraordinarily common, a Thanksgiving dinner dish, and Thanksgiving dinner for, well, when I'm recording this is 2 days away, and when you're hearing it, well, it was probably just a few days ago. And although it does come from South America, it is also very, very widely cultivated in the Pacific Islands. It is grown in Samoa, Hawaii, New Zealand, South America, of course, and many of the other small islands that make up the homelands of the Polynesian people. Pretty much all of the tropical places around the edges of the Pacific grow the sweet potato. So how did that cross the Pacific Ocean? Well, was it floated similar to how the people sometimes say pineapple might have been? Maybe. Theoretically possible, yes, but probably not. And the reason we know this is because of the names. Even if the sweet potato somehow randomly made it across the Pacific Ocean, if the fruit that grows underground and doesn't float somehow floated across the Pacific, and even though it had been soaking in salt water, was still viable, and then this half-rotten thing was planted, even if all of that happened, the names would have been different. The Pacific Islanders, the Polynesian people, would have called it something else. The names are simply too similar to just be a coincidence. I'm going to be mispronouncing these. I do apologize, but in Peru and Ecuador, the sweet potato goes by the names Kumar, Comal, and Kumal. And that is pretty damn close to the terms in Polynesia, Kuma, Kumara, Umara, depending on where you are. So just to say those in a row, you can judge the linguistic similarities. Kumar, Comal, Kumal, Kuma'a, Kumara, Umara. So it is much more likely that instead of floating across the Pacific, it was taken from South America to the Pacific Islands. That when the voyagers from across the ocean left South America, they took food and provisions with them. And what they took was was among other things probably, the pineapple and the sweet potato. Because those were the things that were in abundance and were the best for sea voyages. And when they got back across the ocean and their family said, hey, this is pretty good, what is it? They told them the name that they had been told in South America. So that is actually pretty strong evidence. But it's not the strongest evidence. The strongest evidence, and I do apologize for drawing this out, or saved the closer for the end, which of course you would. Save the strongest for last. Save the best for last. The strongest evidence is that we can point to, yes, 100%, we know that this happened, is genetic.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
As we humans are tracking, tracing, and mapping the human genome, we are also tracking, tracing, and mapping genetic markers that show up in humans from across the world. That's what some private companies are doing. You don't have to have access to a lab to do this. There's a company called 23andMe. You pay them money, and they will analyze. You send them a blood sample. They will analyze your DNA and tell you that you are this percentage Northern European, this percentage Asian, this percentage African, this percentage Polynesian, or whatever your genetic makeup is. They can actually tell. And there are specific genetic markers that are native to very specific human populations. And what we now know, what we didn't know for a very long time, is those very specific genetic markers from the Polynesian people show up in some of the uncontacted tribes and the isolated indigenous groups in South America, especially in Peru, where the sweet potato comes from. So how did they get there? Well, genetic markers cannot float across the ocean. Or rather, they absolutely can and do, but they are always attached to a human. So a human brings his genetic makeup, so to speak, to the South American people. And they have now crossed the ocean. They have found the continent. They interact for a little bit. They celebrate. They probably stay there for a little while. And one of the things they were doing was celebrating with the local South American women. And their specific genomes were, shall we say, introduced into that population. And then the Polynesians go home. But those genomes stay there. And a generation later, they're still there. And another, and another, and another. Those genetic markers are going to last for very, very long periods of time. Especially if they're like a bunch of kids from the get-go. And we know that those markers weren't introduced recently because the genetic markers were done in the uncontacted tribes. So the people that study this stuff, the geneticists, say, hey, it probably happened about 1,000 years ago. So to sum up the last 40 minutes, could they do it? Yes, absolutely. Did they? Well, is there evidence for them doing it? Yes, the legends match up, that's circumstantial. The pineapple is cultivated, but there's a very unlikely origin story for that. The sweet potato is cultivated, and the languages are incredibly close. And then you have the genetic markers, which are the really hard evidence. So to answer the question, did the Polynesian people cross the Pacific Ocean and actually reach South America 1,000 years ago? The answer is almost certainly yes. We don't fully know, and we probably never will, who did it, when, and how many people, but we do know that it did happen. I would like to give a very special thank you to Bryce, who rode the riverboat and gave me some guidance on this subject, provided me with a jumping-off point, and promised that he would listen. Thank you, Bryce. I would also like to say about the podcast itself, the last episode was very, very late, and I also know that it really wasn't very good. I'm aware of that. I tried to make it better, I really did, but the problem is it's just too complicated to make into a cohesive story. I may not try anything like that again. It was perhaps a bit too ambitious on my part. Simplicity is much easier to storify. The next one will be about, I don't know, I was thinking about Santa Claus, the origin stories, the multiple, the myths, the multiple, the variations, the multiple, and like where he lives, which is different depending on where you are. Pretty much all of the Scandinavian countries say that Santa lives in their borders. So, we could settle that. Or not. The other thing I'm doing, I am occasionally playing Twitch games, and I will be doing more. So if you know what that is, I am on Twitch at Storied History, STORIED History. So, this has been Storied History with Charles Chestnut. We do hope you have enjoyed it. If you did, please do hit the like button. I'm going to go look for the next story. If you hit the subscribe button, I will get it to you, even from across the Pacific Ocean or from the North Pole, as the case may be.
Storied History is written and recorded by Charles Chestnut in New Orleans, Louisiana, with audio production and original music by Seamus O'Connor. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, and we'll see you soon.